Der Fußball ist zurück in der zweiten Liga.
Bravo, macht Tempo, wartet auf Harte. Zwanke kommt und jetzt ist es Klos. Also Arminia Bielefeld.
Penny, 2-0. 2-0 für den FC St. Pauli.
Diese
Flanke, Tor, nächster Treffer.
Ist heuer Fernandes mit vorne. Ja klar ist er mit vorne. Kittel mit der Ecke, Feuerball und da! Das ist der Wahnsinn!
For the final time in 2020, we bring to you the Zweite Bundesliga podcast. It has been a long, arduous journey, but we've finally made it to the end of the calendar year, one that we'll never forget for many, many reasons, be it the pandemic, the action on the field, and so much more. This week's episode, the final episode of this year, we'll discuss all the action from match day 13. A very significant piece as we now can crown a champion of the first part of the season. And we can really look at what's happening around the table. We did have an English week. We'll likely discuss those during the main events of each game. And yeah, we look forward to bringing that to you in just a second. My partner in crime, my teammate, the person who is always trusty to lend her great hands onto the wonderful one on the Zweite Bundesliga, Eva Lotte Bohler. Eva, how are you doing this morning?
Not feeling Christmassy, no. But otherwise very well, thank you. Looking forward to this episode. Is a lot that we can talk about. Zweite Bundesliga turning into FC Hollywood at some stages, but otherwise, yeah, very interesting match day. And yeah, let's start with it.
We shall. And it's some interesting stats before we get into the action is that there was only one draw for the entire match day, and that game we'll speak about very later in the program. And every game had a clean sheet bar one. But the game that we're going to start with, it would be amiss to not talk about the team that will be heading into the very shortened winter break. On top of the table is Holstein Kiel, who have somehow, you know, continued to accumulate points, and they had a fantastic English week. They took maximum points. And they ended it off with a 2-0 win at Sandhausen. It wasn't the usual suspects in Lee Jae-sung or Finn Bartels. It was Yannick Diem who opened the scoring on 70 minutes. And then a Diego Contento giveaway of a penalty. He was given a straight red card for a handball in the box, which denied a clear goal. And Yanni Serra, who came off the bench to give Kiel all 3 points, and they end 2020 on top of the Zweite Bundesliga table. Eva, it was a pretty dominant display from Kiel. They had a lot of possession. They had a ton of chances. And frankly, they were very lucky. They were very unlucky not to win by a lot more.
Yeah, I fully agree with you here. I thought that the first half wasn't, the better half for both teams. I thought it got really interesting in the second half because you could see there that Sandhausen was really losing some energy really having something against Kiel's quality on the pitch. You could really see that in that second half. I mean, we have to say, or at least in my opinion, that it wasn't really a foul by that beautiful free kick by Yannick Diem, although it was a beautiful goal. Thought was a bit too less for me to actually give a foul there. But Kiel was by far the better team. I mean, Sandhausen didn't even have a single shot on target. It was a very, very quiet day for Yannis Gilios. I think the only player you can really pick out here for Sandhausen was probably Nicolas Nate, who at least had 95% pass success percentage. But in an overall 68% pass success, you can kind of see where this all was coming from, especially if you only have 33% possession. And yeah, you could see that Sandhausen wasn't really in a good mood, and probably has something to do with that there was a kind of problem in the changing room before the game on Saturday, reportedly. by Kicker magazine and as well as Sandhausen officials by now. They suspended first goalkeeper Martin Freisel effective immediately after. So what Sandhausen says, it didn't get physical, but it was very close to getting physical. And I mean, having something like that before such an important game, I mean, they didn't pick up a single point in that in this English week. Doesn't really help. It does speak that the whole mood, the emotions, and the Sandhausen team itself aren't really good. They're not in a good position at the moment, not only table wise, but it seems like team wise as well. So that's going to be very tricky for them. And for Kiel, I mean, they do deserve that first place going to that winter mini winter break. I mean, they have 5 wins in a row. It's a new club record, actually, and they signed a new left back yesterday, I thought. Hope I do this right now. I think his name is Mikkel Kirkiskov. He is a Danish player, and they got him until 2023. So they kind of looked for a player. He will start from January 1st on. Mm-hmm. So that can be an interesting player for the future. And I mean, even if Finn Bartels has 3 shots on goal, doesn't manage to score one of them, and they still win. I mean, there's a lot of quality in that team. And if on the other side, Dennis Diekmeyer is the one with the most shots on goal, you can kind of see where Sandhausen's main problems lie at the moment. Behrens isn't scoring either. So, yeah, very tough times ahead of them. They do have 2 weeks or 1.5 weeks until the next game, so they do have some time to pull themselves together, but it's going to be a tough season for them.
100%. And when you have such disharmony in the changing rooms, that really, you can really see it on the pitch. They don't look like a team at all. It's 11 individuals playing their own game. And you know, Michael Schiele has a massive task ahead, even if Sandhausen do push with him, because what is clear is that there is a massive disconnection at Sandhausen. And we've never, the funny thing is, we haven't seen that with Sandhausen in my recollection anyway. They are a workmanlike team. They work together. They try and maximize their opportunities. And they are just so far away at the moment. So it's going to be an interesting short break. And they really need to turn things around, because even though there's a point deficit to the teams below them, you know, that gap can close in an instance. Let's get a bit more positive and let's talk about VfL Bochum, because they ended 2020 in style. A 3-0 win against Heidenheim, and they scored some beautiful goals in this game. And it started with Danny Blum's wonderful goal from about 30, 35 yards out, clipping the inside of the left-hand goalpost for Kevin Muller and into the back of the net. Simon Soller equaled Robert Jules for the top scorer at Bochum with 7. He scored a goal in 32. And then Thomas Isfeld, who we haven't seen a lot of this season, he scored a lovely free kick in stoppage time to give Bochum all 3 points. And it means that they'll be in the top 5 come Christmas time. It is the kind of gift that all Bochum fans would love to have. And this year, they do have it.
Yeah, and I thought it was very good game by them. I mean, there were, I think there was that one situation where Bochum had the ball for 2 minutes and wasn't attacked by Heidenheim. I thought overall, Heidenheim's pressing in that game wasn't really good. I mean, they did have a higher pass success rate throughout the game, but I thought that they had 2 or 3 chances to at least get one goal back, but they were unlucky, especially I think Christian Kühlwetter had a huge chance to make a 2-1. But in the end, I thought that Bochum just was the team that used their chances better. I mean, we've seen that they definitely improved that throughout the season. And yeah, I mean, Riemann had that one really situation where he had to pick up the ball, where the jump from the post on the goal line and then back in his hands, basically, that Kuvert a chance. But yeah, I was really impressed by Bochum's display throughout the game. I mean, we've seen that they struggled against clubs like Kiel, and they did a way better job in that game. And yeah, they were definitely the deserved winners. I mean, it's a bit weird if you look back into that midweek fixture against Hannover, which, if you have seen Hannover throughout that season, they're better at home, of course, but you could really see that Reis was very angry with that performance, and I think that was really the right answer from his team. I mean, that, as you've mentioned, that Blum goal was a beauty. Salah nearly looked like he had to be subbed out because when he puts the ball into the goal, like, he just, with his whole body, just slams against the post, and you could just hear huge like cry for help, kind of. Yeah, but he could continue. I think he just was, there was some air pressed out of his lungs for just a millisecond. Yeah, and for Thomas Eisfeld, I think that was a very important goal. I mean, it's a beauty as well, and he does not have an easy time at Bochum, not only at this season but last season as well. So for him, that really sends, I mean, there's no better signal you can send to your coach than a goal like this, and for him, very important as well.
A very good goal. I mean, it's not like Heidenheim couldn't have taken anything away from this game. Certainly the substitutions of Schnatter and Tobias Moore in the second half gave them a bit more dynamism. They were much better at creating good quality opportunities, but it does end a good run of form they've had recently, being Heidenheim. You know, we were a bit unsure about them at the start of the season. Things were becoming a bit dodgy, but the last few weeks they've been quite good, and unfortunately they ran into a Bochum side who just, you know, coming off that loss, as you mentioned, they were, yeah, they were desperate to win, and they did enough to do so. Our final game of Group 1 is the game that featured last night. Of course, if you're listening to this on a Tuesday, when the podcast is released, it is Monday, but it is the Monday night game. It was Karlsruhe and Hamburger SV. This was a massive game for both sides. Karlsruhe hadn't taken many points during the first two games of the English week. Hamburg wanting to make it 3 from 3, and they did that. Bakary Yatta opening the scoring on 3 minutes. Now, he did score against Karlsruhe last season at the Wildparkstadion, many of you may remember. It is his first goal of the season. Philip Hoffmann continued his good goal scoring form. He now has 7 on the campaign. And who are you going to call when you need a goal in the Zweite Bundesliga? No, you're not calling Dan Aykroyd and the Ghostbusters. You are calling Simon Terodde. 14 goals he has this season, and another game-winning goal to ensure that Hamburg finished 2020 in the top three. It was an interesting game, Eva. One that you felt that Hamburg had control of, even at 1-1. And it would be fair to say it would be no more fitting to have someone like Terodde once again be the hero.
Yeah, first off, I think that win was definitely deserved for Hamburg, but especially they deserved that in the first half. I think this was overall the half where their most chances were created from both sides. You could see in the second half that both teams were a bit more focusing on their defending. I think they wanted to take out the heat from both sides, and then if you have that pairing, Karlsruhe or Hamburg, if you have a Terodde on your side, and you had Hoffmann on the other side, he had a chance to score that really late contender as well for them. There will always be chances, but I thought that Karlsruhe didn't really give up the fight, even when they were one man down after Heiser was sending off with a second yellow. And I was very impressed by their performance still. I thought they weren't completely, yet they definitely had chances. There are two players I want to pick out, or each player for each team. Yatta for HSV. I thought this was his best performance this season so far. I mean, he was responsible for the most key passes. He had two shots on target as well with Terodde, and thought he was throughout the game definitely a contender for MVP for this game. I mean, of course, you have Terodde scoring the goal, but for Yatta, it hasn't been an easy season, hasn't been an easy second half of the season last year. So with a performance like this, really bringing up his self-confidence. And on the other side, Batmas for Karlsruhe, I thought that he was one of the players to look out for, similar to, he was kind of the opponent for Yatta in that game. And yeah, in the end, I think it was a really interesting game to watch still, especially in the first half, because both teams did make some mistakes. Hamburg did as well. I mean, that if you look at that equalizer, nobody's really responsible for Hoffmann. And Batmas can just give that assist very easily to him. So yeah, that was not really good by Hamburg. So they do have some points to improve on, but I mean, they will be very happy with those three wins in a row. I mean, I did say it last week, it's going to be interesting to see if they now start a new series of wins of five games or something like that. Then you have, I mean, we now have two pairings where one team picked up 9 points this week and one team who picked up 0 points, which is KSC. I mean, they can do that because they picked up some points so far that they kind of save. I mean, they will be disappointed, but I think for everyone in Karlsruhe it was clear that they wouldn't be top five for the whole season. And I mean, that now you can see how important it was that they picked up those points very early in the season.
Absolutely. They are a very streaky side, and when they were at their best and they were winning games quite comprehensively, things were looking good. But it is a bitter end for them to lose their last three and go from being in a position where they were in the top five to now being only 4 points above Braunschweig and 5 points above the relegation playoff spot. Let's take our first break, and on the other side, we're going to a team that has started to hit form heading into Christmas. It's Fortuna Düsseldorf and St. Pauli. If you'd told me that heading into Christmas, Fortuna Düsseldorf would win four of their last five games, you'd have to pinch me. But as the reality sets in, Fortuna fans have been treated to what would be a fairly reasonable Christmas gift. That is the case. Four of their last five have been wins, and a 3-0 win at St. Pauli really putting the star on the Christmas tree. They end 2020 in the top five, and when it didn't seem very conceivable, they've been able to score goals at will. It's the second consecutive game they've found the back of the net three times. They did that against Osnabrück in midweek. Now, the situation is that once again, they've taken all 3 points. Despite St. Pauli starting the game, the stronger Matthias Zimmermann scored an unlikely goal to beat the stretched hands of Sven Brodersen. Reuven Hennings continued his excellent midweek form. He chipped in to make it 2-0. And then Edgar Pribb got his first goal in Fortuna colours in stoppage time. It really was a game that changed on its head once Fortuna got the goal. And it really is looking up for Uwe Rösler's side.
Yeah, we talked about that off air. I mean, St. Pauli had the better start into that game. I think Curie had a really, really good chance, and he missed the goal. And after that, Düsseldorf kind of got into the game a bit better. Ditkin doesn't really look very good when Zimmermann scores that goal. And from then on, I don't know. I mean, Sampdoria did have chances, but the way they did not use them is a bit worrying. And I mean, also a lot of inaccurate passes throughout the game. And I mean, they still can't thank Brodersen. I mean, he still saved 5 of the 8 shots on target or shots against him. But for St. Pauli, really, really dark days. I mean, if you look back at the beginning of this English week, again, that game against Braunschweig, now this game, I mean, that score sheet doesn't completely copy, as I said, how the game went. But that really doesn't help you if you keep losing games, only picked up 1 point from those 3 games. And I mean, it's really difficult, of course, to play against such a Düsseldorf side that is such a, in a good mood before Christmas. But yeah, in the end, not a really good time for St. Pauli at the moment. I mean, they're only, yeah, what they can look up to is that the teams around them don't really score as well or pick up points. But after Christmas, they definitely have to get back to that. Will not get easier. I mean, this, I keep sound like Groundhog Day, but this is a really, really tough season for every team that just fights more against relegation and then promotion, because you don't really have time to reorganize, even if you bring in new players. They did bring in a new player. I think he isn't allowed to play before January 1st. But yeah, that's you can't really change a lot to get yourself out of that. And I mean, if their only hope is that they're better than Würzburg, that's not going to work out, because basically there are 2 teams that can go down directly. And I still think they have a better squad than they are in at the moment, so doesn't really says all. So yeah, really tough season that's ahead, similar to Sandhausen probably. But for St. Pauli, it does not surprise me in a way that we talk about this for a couple of seasons now, that they always have that point at the season where nothing seems to work.
It is quite interesting. I remember seeing a video on Twitter, and I've got it on my notes here, and I'm reminded of a Cleveland Browns fan. It was the year they went 0-16, and it's just a fan yelling, "You are a factory of sadness." And I can only imagine, and the only correlation here is that they both wear brown. That is literally the correlation. But at the moment, it is really sad to watch St. Pauli, because they have a nice squad. It's not a great squad, it's a nice squad. And they are so patchy in the way they play their games. They were very good in the first 10 minutes. They tested Fortuna, and then they went and got, and they conceded a soft goal. A very good goal, though, taken by Zimmermann, but avoidable was the real term. And then it was just controlled by Dusseldorf, and Dusseldorf then found the second, and then they got the third in stoppage time. So I think there are now going to have to be questions of whether Timo Schulz is the guy. I'm all for someone getting time. All for someone getting time. But we're a third of the season in, and you just don't know when the second win is coming. It just doesn't look likely. And, you know, how long can you go until it becomes terminal or it becomes too late? That's the real question that St. Pauli have to think about, because you don't like seeing someone lose their job, but how long can you carry on being this bad? That's the thing. Anyway, let's move on to a team that has been a little bit up and down recently, but we know that they've got some good quality, and that's Greuther Fürth. And they took a 3-0 win away at Eintracht Braunschweig. It was tight in the first half. They were very fortunate to not give away 1, but maybe 2 penalties. Referee and VAR said no dice on that. And then Fürth really turned it on in the second half. Three goals. Sebastian Ernst, Dixon, Abiyama, and Robert Kerr, the Dortmund junior, getting on the score sheet. But really, statistically, it said that Fürth dominated. And especially in the second half, that was very much the case.
Yeah, but I really want to speak about the penalty decision because it's basically in the first minute of the game. And I saw that and I was like, if the referee doesn't see that, then it is a clear decision to overturn for me. Because it's not like Nick Poschwitz, whose arm is being held on to by that field player, is, I don't know, you sometimes speak about, he does make a lot of that situation out of that foul. It's not like this. I mean, that field player, I don't know who it was, but he keeps holding his arm and Poschwitz doesn't really engage in it to his opponent in the same way. Then I would have said, okay, then it kind of wages itself out. But you can see that Poschwitz wants to jump to get the ball because it's a corner that is being kicked by Kroos, I think, and he can't. And he tries and then he falls down. And for me, that is one of the clearest penalties I've seen this season. And if you look at Bundesliga and Zweite Bundesliga and what penalties have been given to teams, I don't really know why the referee if the referee doesn't see it, why the VAR doesn't overturn it. And then I do think that we speak about another game. I don't think that Eintracht Braunschweig would have won that, but it would have been, I mean, would have been a bad start for them that early into the game, definitely, if it would have been a penalty. Because then you could see 5 minutes after the second half started that Fürth had the better start into the game. Then Abdullahi misses that shot and afterwards they can't really do anything against him. And I thought that at least at some stages that would have been the case for Braunschweig in the first half. And now they only have 1 point from the three games. Have been very unlucky. And yeah, it's really hard to, I mean, if you have a chance like that against Fürth, I mean, if you look at those last three games, there were 10 goals, so they scored 6, conceded 4. It's really difficult for Braunschweig to create any more chances. And I mean, that chance by Abdullahi, I think Kobe Lansky sees him, very good pass by him. And for me, Abdullahi's shot is just not precise enough. I mean, Burchard doesn't really has to do a lot. He just can't stand there. I mean, Burchard saved every single shot against them. Were 6 in the end. 6 shots on target by Braunschweig, actually. And you could also see it in the XGs. I mean, it's 0.9 to 1.2. So it is very close. And that's why I say, don't really think equally to the St. Pauli-Düsseldorf game that the score sheet completely says everything about the game.
Yeah, and you look at that chance you mentioned with Abdullahi. I mean, one-on-one with the goalkeeper, such a vital opportunity. And we should continue with the penalty because it was it's a foul. I mean, that kind of foul would be given in open play elsewhere. So it's just it's baffling that wasn't given a penalty, but. Anyway, I mean, at least we got to see Braunschweig in their OG kits, which looked very cool. Not going to lie. I did enjoy the look of those. Let's move on to our final Group 2 game. Now, this game was initially going to be cancelled because a member of the Würzburger Kickers staff had contracted COVID-19. But the DFL had other ideas. They made this game go ahead. And Würzburg had only 14 players available. Now, how it was put to me is because there was only one person infected, the DFL basically felt that, you know, Würzburg would have enough players to fill a team. And that really put them at a disadvantage. However, they produced a gallant effort to not only be competitive, they were very good in the early exchanges, and they were very unlucky not to score on a number of occasions. But eventually, the class of Darmstadt was going to be too much for them, and it was a 2-0 win for the hosts, with Tobias Kemper and Felix Platter getting on the score sheet. And Eva, you know it's a really bad situation when your third-choice goalkeeper is having to play as an outfield player in the dying moments of a game. We're talking, you know, as much as we are mad football lovers and all that, it really feels like it was unjust for Würzburg to be playing this game.
Yeah, and I mean, we've seen it twice on that weekend. We had the same situation or similar situation with VfL Wolfsburg against VfB Stuttgart on the weekend. And I don't think in times of a global pandemic, it's a wise choice to say if you get, how much is it, 14 players to play?
Yep.
Or, I mean, then you have to play. I mean, this is a pandemic. This is nothing where your team is responsible because their, I don't know, exercises are not really fit for the team. That's why you have a lot of injuries. I mean, we see that at Werder Bremen last season. But it's a pandemic and we still don't know which impact it will have on players. We still don't have really vaccine in Germany, at least at the moment. It will take a lot of time. So I don't really understand why the DFL says here, okay, our calendar is so tight. Sorry, there's no way. And for me, I mean, for Würzburg, it's even worse because there are a couple of clubs, you could say, in the Zweite Bundesliga, they can maybe deal with it. But even if you look at the Bundesliga, there are only three or four clubs you can really say they have a second team that could do that. And I just don't think it's fair in any way. And there are special times. I do still have to say, hats up to Würzburg. I thought it was a very courageous performance by them. They could have scored a goal. They could have said, okay, we're just going to be 11 players just parking the bus. They didn't do that, and that's why I really want to... I was really impressed, for example, by Rich Munsey, who was really trying to be a leader in that game, but in the end, of course, Darmstadt is an unlucky opponent in that matter. Yeah, I would agree it should have been postponed. I mean, we really have to look out for the players' health, and that has nothing to do with looking out for them. And I mean, we see that it's possible that games are being postponed. I mean, if you look, for example, at Bayern München and Bayer Leverkusen, whose cup games are being postponed to next year. We do say that next year you do think that there will be some... I mean, there will be more testing available, there will be a vaccine available. Mm. Maybe it's a better time to start then, especially shortly before Christmas. You risk everyone getting quarantined, getting the virus, and then bringing them into their families. Yeah. And yeah. That's, for me, that's not an understanding decision, no.
No, it wasn't. But I think as a neutral, you can take a lot of heart knowing that those who were made to play really put it all on the line. And it was, you know, it was inspiring because they, you know, you mentioned about teams that could easily just, you know, like, and fill it with a lot of, you know, a bunch of different players who could fill the void. Würzburg don't have that. They just don't. And they were very courageous. And, you know, it would have been a really bad look at Darmstadt not being able to win this game. They did what they had to do. It wasn't pretty. At the best of times, they had a ton of possession, which you'd expect. And yeah, they got the 3 points they needed, and yeah, you can't help but not feel sorry for Würzburg in this situation. It's a very unfortunate situation for them to be in. and it does, it just makes all the things worse, being that they are rock bottom heading into the new year. Let's take our final break, and on the other side, we will review the final three games of match day 13, and we are going to be starting at the Max Morlock Stadion. It's Nürnberg and Erzgebirge Aue. The final three games of 2020 might not have really grasped us with goals, but there were important results in any way you look at it. And we do start with Nürnberg's game with Erzgebirge Aue, because Nürnberg have been slowly working their way into the top half of the standings. And it was a 1-0 win. It was a Robin Hack goal. And more importantly, it does see Nürnberg climb, and I mean climb, into seventh place. They end the first part of the 2020 portion of the season with three wins out of their last five. Eva, we know that we've not been entirely convinced with Nürnberg so far this season. They weren't great, it has to be said, but they did get the all-important goal, and it was enough.
Yep, and my microphone just doesn't want to, just wants to go into the winter break as well, so sorry about that. I've seen that, I only seen the highlights of that, and I thought Aue had the better start. I think Florian Krüger misses the goal, and after that, I mean, once again, I really want to point out Johannes Geis here. I think in general, he has been one of the reasons Nürnberg is picking up points at the moment. Although you have to say, when you look at his corners, so there is a corner accuracy statistics. He was responsible for three corners for Nürnberg, 0% accuracy. Not a lot. Might want to improve on that one, Johannes. What Nürnberg had in this game, what Aue didn't had was effectivity, efficiency, you could say. Testrud had a couple of chances, couldn't really do the same what Hack did. I mean, you have to say Hack had a huge chance to make it to score a brace in that game. It's kind of funny because everything until he actually tries to convert that chance into a goal is really, really good. How he keeps giving himself the assists before that, but after that, shot is not really good in my opinion. I could have done more about that, and I mean, if you would haven't been 1-0 up at that stage, I think you would be very angry with that. But wasn't a bad performance by Aue, but I think something we've seen last season in games like this, they do lack, I don't want to say self-confidence, but that last kind of spark to take points out of games like this. And then for Nürnberg, we do have two teams here now in that pairing that have closer the amount of points. I mean, Nürnberg has six, Aue four, has been one win, one defeat, one draw this week. So I don't want to say they can be happy with that, but still think there are teams who are worse off. So in the end, it's a bit of a lucky win for Nürnberg, but Aue just wasn't efficient as Nürnberg was.
I do tend to agree. And you mentioned Johannes Geis, who was excluding his ability to take corner set pieces, was very good in the heart of midfield. I did come across a rather interesting statistic about Johannes Geis. His last 34 games, it does contain his shots on goal map, which, as my cats stampede through my podcast setup, he has had 54 shots on goal and not a single one is inside the penalty box. He has more shots from halfway than he does inside the 18, which I find absolutely fascinating. Thanks to Florian Zenger, who is a journalist in Nuremberg, who initially posted that on Twitter, and I thought it was quite funny. But yeah, I guess the thing is, we can really compare Nuremberg from this small sample size to what they were last season, and that was that they were in a lot of these kinds of games where they weren't particularly good and they failed to win. And what they've done recently is that they've been able to, you know, really grind, get the goal, and then just defend it like it's no tomorrow. And they, you know, despite giving up the number of shots they did, it was 16 in total, they were able to just hold on. And that's the mark of a team that has got a good mentality. Don't mention that to Dortmund. And yeah, they're just picking up points, and it was a good English week for them. They picked up 6 points out of a total 9. So, you know, it's not a bad end for them heading into 2021. As for Paderborn, who it would seem have been hit and miss, you know, they will finish 2020 in 11th place in the standings. But a good hard-fought win against Osnabrück away from home. It was a Sven Mikkel goal on 56 minutes, his first of the campaign, to give Paderborn a much-needed 3 points. We knew they were going to be hot and cold this season either, but they were really dominant in this game. And, you know, they really, you know, statistically it may not show it, but they really should have blown Osnabrück out. I thought Osnabrück were quite poor in this one.
Yeah, definitely. I would tend to agree. I thought what kind of changed that game a bit was the red card against Maurice Trapp. For me, was a bit harsh to give a red card here. I mean, it kind of leveled itself out.
Yep.
When Paderborn got the red card as well. But yeah, of course, in a game like this, I know that I think some Paderborn fans see it as a small derby. It does changes something, and I mean, but still, Paderborn was the better team. They created more chances. They showed more danger throughout their game, had more possession, higher pass success. The only player that really, yeah, you can kind of say he was in a good mood that day was probably Kuhn, who was very good in goal, and maybe Ludovic Reis, who, yeah, from game to game improves, in my opinion, shows where he can be an important factor for Osnabrück. But in the end, I mean, especially if you have a Sven Michel who was one of the MVPs of that game for Paderborn, definitely. Then, and Singerle, who has been good in goal as well, then you, then you deserve that win. And I mean, if we shortly come to Christian Santos, he came in at halftime, and he won 7 aerials, which is kind of a lot, but he didn't have a single shot on target. So that's maybe one reason Osnabrück isn't scoring a lot of goals. I mean, Kerk doesn't score, Santos doesn't score, and then you don't have a lot of players. I mean, on the likes of Multhub, but not a lot of other players who can really perform that well on that level. And yeah, for me, it was that now we have another game where that only one goal difference doesn't really, says all about that game.
Yeah, I mean, I think our good mate and podcast expert, Lewis Ostrowski, really summed it up best. You know, you can't take away from how good Paderborn were, because they really should have, you know, put Osnabrück away. But the lack of creativity from Osnabrück was really disappointing. They've been very up and down recently. It's now their third consecutive loss at home. And yeah, they were just nowhere near the standard required to be competitive in that game. And it was really disappointing to see that, you know, they did not test Singler and that Paderborn defense, who can be exploited with the right mix of creativity and attacking prowess, and they just offered next to nothing, and that was a shame because they've had a very good start under Marco Grotta. So, yeah, that's disappointing. Good win for Paderborn, much needed. Can they build from it? We will wait and see. And that brings us to the final game of 2020. And it is fitting that this game happens to be the 0-0. It is fitting that you could barely see the game because it was more of a Halloween-type atmosphere with a misty, cool, aura around the Jahn Arena. And, yeah, it was not a good game of football. It has to be said. So it is fitting that neither side was able to break the deadlock. This game ended 0-0, and it doesn't help either side, who've had mixed reviews on what their season is so far. Eva, I'm not sure which way you want to go about it. It was pretty even statistically all around the park, and yeah, neither team had any sort of cutting edge to open the scoring.
Yeah, I watched that conference with Bochum and Heidenheim. And first of all, you couldn't see a lot because, as you mentioned, kind of Halloween atmosphere. The game kind of wanted to settle the mood there. What wasn't a good one to watch. I mean, you could just look at the statistic and see that basically everywhere is kind of leveled. I mean, from, I don't know, possession to pass success to... But one thing I have to say, Vanhoof as X92 only have a pass success percentage of 63%. This is from 410 passes. They only completed 257 for a team like Hannover. I would really worry about that a bit. I mean, and it says a lot that they're... The player with their highest pass success percentage was Michael Ratajczak, that 38-year-old goalkeeper. maybe says a lot about the game. As you mentioned, wasn't a pretty game to watch. Only really player who could have made an impact was Jan George, but the rest of it, yeah. I don't know what to say. I mean, even if when I looked through the statistics, they weren't really giving away a lot. If you look at the XGs, you have 1.03 to 0.94. So this is leveled as well. So this is basically, it screams nil all, and that's what you got. And yeah. Wouldn't recommend watching the highlights.
If you could see them, that is. Because amongst the mists, there was a football game. It doesn't help either side. I mean, Jahn Regensburg, they will end 2020 in 13th. Only one goal behind Hannover in 12th. And yeah, a bit of a limper for both sides. And, you know, Hannover's form's been inconsistent. Regensburg have been very up and down, and yeah, that they probably belong where they sit at the moment. And yeah, there's really not a lot to say about this game because not much really happened. To end the podcast, I thought we might as well end on a better note, a positive note. So Eva, I'm going to ask you, and I think I know what the answer will be anyway, from the entirety of 2020, what has been one of those years, one moment in the Zweite Bundesliga that stands out to you, it can be the end of last season, it can be current, your favorite moment of the Zweite Bundesliga in the year 2020?
Oh, I think I really have to say my last game with people in stadium. That was, of course, the Stuttgart game. I mean, I have been a bit lucky considering that. Imagine it would have been, I don't know, no offense, but away in Sandhausen or something like that. So that is probably my best moment because I remember that after that game, everyone was saying this was kind of the last test if we could get promoted and if we could come back after Stuttgart scoring, then we would deserve this. And then there's not really a lot that is could come our way. And then Corona came, basically. But otherwise, so this is, of course, besides the actual promotion, but because there were no fans there, and for me, football is fans in the stadiums. That was my one of my best moments. Of course, there are a couple of them. I mean, the 6-0 against Regensburg as well. there are a lot of them, and I just hope that there will be one day again when we can all go back into the stadiums, can all be happy, can hug each other again. Until then, I wish every one of you Merry Christmas or whatever you're celebrating. Stay safe. Hopefully we can get that vaccine very soon. Thanks for listening to the podcast, of course. Thanks for giving Matthew and I something to talk about every week. And thanks for your support.
Absolutely, 100% agree. And, you know, excluding having to watch the New York Jets of the Bundesliga, that is Schalke, if you get that reference. honestly, the Zweite Bundesliga is the platform that really gives myself at least 90 minutes of some sort of sanity around my crazy life. But what I will say, though, is that, you know, and Eva said it the best, you know, we are so lucky to have a very good following of people who are on this journey with us to talk about the Zweite Bundesliga. And I really can't thank Eva enough for having an unbelievable teammate, equal, to talk about the Zweite Bundesliga with, and, you know, to be the only platform in English to bring such a league to life is a joy. And you know, despite how tough 2020 has been for a lot of people with the pandemic and the likes, you know, we will get through this, and it may not be a quick short-term fix, but, you know, we have to continue to rally together and not do stupid things and not say things that, without knowing the facts, felt fake horse, and not do silly things like let Karl-Heinz Rummenigge have a platform to speak. Just get him off the radio, the TV. We need more Leon Goretzkas and Joshua Kimmiches in the world. But enough of the rambling. What I will say, though, is that we are very thankful. And as Eva said, we hope everyone has a Merry Christmas if you celebrate it. You know, if not, a safe holiday period. Hopefully everyone has a Happy New Year. And we do promise that early next year, after Match Day 14 concludes, we will be back. Thank you very much. And until next time, it's goodbye.